Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest speaker today, Alex Echevarria. How about that? Not bad. and his wife Jean. Thanks for coming. Alex has taught for many, many years in Colorado, East Asian studies. And history and philosophy. And in 2007, he was honored by the U.S. Japan Foundation as the Outstanding Japanese Humanities Teacher in the United States. Alex has lived and traveled quite a bit through Japan and China on various grants, and his artwork, his jizos, and Darumas gave us a nice Bodhidharma, you see, are influenced by, all of those travels. He and his wife moved to Vashon in 2013, founded the Wabi Sabi Studio, which Bernetta stumbled upon during the art tour. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing about Jizo Bodhisattva from you, Alex. Thanks for coming. One more thing I forgot to say is that Alex also teaches martial arts. Karate, maybe? Yeah?
It's actually come from the monastic tradition of China. Kenpo or Shaolin Kenpo.
Okay. Yeah. Well, my daughter knows a little of that.
Yeah.
Because Alex taught her this spring. Thanks.
Visual images to show you because that's really important. The iconography and just the meaning that you get through the imagery is very important to look at. Shadows of grass is just sounds like a really beautiful term. It's a pretty sounding. It actually refers mainly to the underworld of death. That is what is beneath the grass.
Mm.
So, this is one of my favorite pictures I like. And if you go to Japan, you'll notice the jizo are everywhere. And I really like that in one of these animation movies of Totoro that they put it right in there, just in the countryside. I used to live in the countryside of Japan. It was in a small mountain town. It was really close to Eheiji, which is the temple of the Soto Zen sect. And my town was filled with jizo everywhere. It's like, what are these things? At the time I studied Buddhism, I didn't know that much about who the jizo was. I just became pretty much entranced by seeing them all the time. And traveling later, I recognized more and more. And I looked at, I'd like to have one of these in my garden. I go and look at the price tag. It's like, $1,000. And they weigh a lot of money. So I just, 10 years ago, just started making them for fun and then really just got into it. It was a very fun meditative process to just sit in the studio and carve these things. It's out of, I do it out of wet concrete. It's an interesting process. But let's go through. I think I got the right click.
Is it turned on?
No, probably not. There we go.
Slider.
Ah, there we go. So let me start off with the terminology, which is going to be a little bit difficult to look at. from the Sanskrit to the Chinese to the Japanese. And it's difficult to translate this that has any type of meaning to anybody. You say Earth Treasury, Earth Store, or Earth Womb. It's like, what does that mean? Well, it's a little bit difficult because you have to go back to the story of what this would be, is that Jizo is the one that really is of the earth, still here, has not retired into nirvana, is not gone. The Jizo, one thing you notice about the iconography and the movement of the Jizo, he's usually standing, walking, and moving, which means that he's always active. He's looking for beings that he can save or take care of. As opposed to many of the other Buddhas you see are mainly seated. They're seated. They're pretty much, they would say, that they have retired, in a sense. but not the Jizo. The Jizo is very active. Sometimes the Jizo is seated. Sometimes the Jizo is in different mudras. It kind of varies in what you'll look at. But it really is the bodhisattva that holds the earth together, in some sense. So I think Earth Treasury, Earth Womb just does apply quite well. Let's go to this next part. It's interesting. Well, let me go back. There, you can kind of see, let's go to the iconography. The Jizo will typically be holding what is called a jewel, and of course the staff. The staff usually has six rings on it, which represent the six realms. The jewel is an odd thing to look at because there's so many different interpretations of what that means. The jewel can be a wishing jewel, something that you wish for. It can also be, it also signifies, it holds it out that please don't have any fear. And it also symbolizes the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, or the Dharma, the Sangha, the community of the people. Also, because of the roundness, could also be the earth itself. So it's different interpretations you hear everywhere. The Jizo, again, his character, I'm going to go to this next part of the story. Like, who was the Jizo? And the Jizo, possibly the stories are mixed, but again, the important thing about this is the story. In all religion, in all sacred texts, you don't want to get bogged down in literal interpretation or what's true or what's not. It's the story that matters, especially to the community. And in Japan, when I talk about this, you'll see how the story is so important to the people there as a community. The Jizo probably, they say, was a woman starting out in India who followed the Buddha and wanted to save her mother from who passed away. And the story was that she vowed never to attain enlightenment, that she wanted to just spend her days on earth helping everybody, finding those who, you know, give them compassion and saving them. And as a woman, her main interest was with her mother in the beginning, but later this gets transferred to children. We'll see that later. As the Jizo made her way into China, kind of went to being more male. Okay, just like you see with other bodhisattvas that possibly like Guan Yin was probably male in India, goes to China, becomes female, goes to Japan as the Kanon and becomes male and female. This is what I love about how things move around there. The Jizo, when you see the Jizo imagery in Korea and Japan, sometimes you can't tell if the Jizo is male or female. Very soft face, feminine features to him. And again, the story of the Jizo is the Jizo can also become an avatar, is that the Jizo appears to help others, sometimes as a male, usually as a monk, and sometimes as a nun. So it varies with the stories you hear. I think that's the beauty of it and her. So who is the Jizo today? When you go to Japan, you'll see the Jizo everywhere. If you really start looking, all of a sudden, Jizo's there. You're just like, whoa, you look in a corner, there's Jizo. You're walking down the street, there's Jizo. Sometimes they're placed in threes and sixes, nines, there's always good luck numbers. But you know, typically you see them in three, sometimes two, but that's for travelers. So it's going to vary in how you see it. The Jizo today, again, is centered on, is a mixture. It's very, the syncretism of Japanese religion, it's mixed with Confucianism, Buddhism, and Shinto. They all get kind of put in there together. Because Buddhism in Japan is mainly devoted to ancestor worship and the afterlife. And the Jizo is connected to that, but the Jizo is also connected to the now, in a sense. I'll go through that with some of the stories. Well, if you like lots of
amazing imagery and pictures of Japan, my friend Charles Lehman. He's a professional photographer. If you remember this website, Occasional Gaijin, just type it in. He's got the most amazing pictures, just amazing. So, and if you're thinking of going to Japan and you want to just look at some of his travels and the places he's been, this will give you inspiration. So definitely look him up. I'm trying to go to Japan with him. And he and his wife, they were our good friends. So the story of the Jizo, he makes his way into East Asia. He mainly gets connected to becoming the savior of children. And when children pass away, when they're very young, you know, there was a high rate of infant mortality in pre-modern times. And infanticide was practiced in a lot of communities to control with a lack of food. So if you lose a child, it's a horrible, horrible thing. And this is going to sound very strange, but for within the practice of the Jizo, the child was sent to the underworld because it had created, in a sense, an affront to it, the parents. It is given in so much grief and suffering that the child had to pay a penance, which is odd. Okay, so while the children were down in the underworld, Asai no Kawada, I think is... And you have this hag or this demon that overlooks them, but their only task was to build these rocks and pile them up. So you see these sometimes around Buddhist temples and Jizo shrines, rocks piled up. And that is to gain merit, and that was their kind of their job as different things, what it means. And then the demon who was watching them would come smash them and make it do it all over again. Not very nice. So the Jizo, his job was to, I think you see him there, sneaking in. The Jizo will sneak in sometimes and take the children and get them away. Take them back so they can be reborn into the next life. I like that this is a modern one on the left where the Jizo is more confrontational and holds out the jewels like there's no fear. And just tells the children, follow me and we'll get to the next world. We'll get to the next rebirth. So for the parents, it was important that the process of this was to let go. They had to accept the fact that their child needed help, and they had to go to the temple, they had to say their prayers, give offerings, and ask the Jizo to take the child to the next place. Now, the Mizuko is the children, Ko is a child, and Mizu is water. So the children of the water is really this practice that probably came from the term that Japanese... Japan is surrounded by islands. Water is everywhere. It rains a lot, just like here. And in a sense that we return to the water, and the children with their death, they return to the water. And so you go to a lot of these temples that will have Jizo holding children. And this is, it's not necessarily Mizuko, that this transfers into people maybe for fertility temples. My wife and I were married at a fertility temple in Japan. We never had any children, though. But we had thousands of children, like thousands of people as students, I guess. So maybe that's how it all worked. Kara Jones is an artist here who also talks about this, who has lost children. So she does some Buddhist imagery as well. So when you go to some of these places, you find the Jizo will have a red bib, possibly toys around it. If you see somebody there... in prayer, it might not necessarily be a mother who has lost a child. It might be a mother who wants a child or a mother who wants to protect her child. It could be a grandmother who maybe has lost a child a long time ago. It could be a grandmother who's praying for her grandchildren to be safe. I mean, you don't know what's going on in the minds of the people. It's their personal prayer that they have with the Jizo. But a lot of times you find if there's a certain shrine, they will leave objects there. If they had lost the child, they will leave an object there. It's almost like that way the Jizo can say, it's almost like a hound dog. It's getting the scent of the child to go find the child. That's an odd metaphor for that. But it's important that a lot of these places, they have to replace the bibs. They get worn down in time. You'll see new ones pop up. It's really beautiful to go to these places and just watch them.
Alex, are all those Jizos?
Yes.
Yeah.
They should be. Typically, they try to put them in groups of, I think, 1,000, if they can. Some temples have to do that. And a lot of people commission these things. And if you're a carver of Jizo, that's great for you. You can get great merit doing this. I found this out later. It's like, oh boy, I got a bonus. It's great. Let me go back. So again, it's the story that matters. The story is important. That for the parent, it's a process of letting go of grief, because time will heal all the wounds at some point. But the letting go process is the most important part of praying to the Jizo. But again, the Jizo is not confined to just being for mothers with children. Let me give you a couple other just odd ones here. Wherever you go in Japan, there's going to be a temple that has a specialty. And some of that is due to some miracle that happened there. It's also to draw in tourists because they have to be self-supporting. The government does not allow money going out to shrines or temples or anything. That's, our government saw to that when we occupied and changed our constitution. So there's the Hara Obi Jizo. So the obi that you use on the kimono, it's to protect women during pregnancy. There's a Jizo called a Hikeshi Jizo. Protects houses and harvest from fire. So you can go there and just make these wishes that you would want from it. Some of these are quite interesting. If you want a child, for fertility, you could go for that. Here's the Kosazuke Jizo. Let's see. Oh, this is a good one for a lot of parents. Kosodate Jizo. Jizo who helps with successful rearing of children. So if you got a difficult child, I think we would go and pray for that child. It's like, God, Jizo, take care of this. The Neko Jizo. I have no idea what this one is. Cat. Cat Jizo. I mean, Japanese love their cats too. I'm not sure what. I want to find this if there's a shrine devoted to this or temple. That would be wonderful. But there was one I really had. I like this one. The Tachiyama Jizo. A Jizo who takes the place of a woman devotee so she can rest once a month. I think that. So, there's a different Jizo in different places for. Some of them are well known for their pain, that they were able to relieve people of headaches. So there's a headache Jizo or something like this. And people will go to these on pilgrimages if they have these ailments or they want certain things. And for the Japanese are wonderful domestic tourists that go all over the place. And it's really been good for their economy. And so these temples really try to have something that fits into the tourist trade. So as a carver of Jizo, I kind of make them more in the, I call the postmodern Jizo imagery. I'll show you some of these. The one on the left is one of our friends. His son had taken his life on the island, RJ. And so the day after RJ took his life, pretty much I got him and just made a Jizo for the parents. And I had to talk to him later about the colors, which was, he liked Dragon Ball Z, which is the animation. So I tried to get the orange and black and green. Yeah, you cannot see on the back here, but there was something his mom gave me that was in his room. It was, she said, I don't know, he just got this and had his room, he loved this little object. It was these two fish. It's like, oh, okay. And it's like, I know this, I've seen this. So I went and looked it up. It's actually a Buddhist imagery of the two fish that swims through the world of sorrow, samsara, to reach enlightenment. It's like, whoa. So I just glued that on the tile and put it on the back of that. On the right side is... I just made this one this last year. It's the autumn Jizo, and you cannot see there's a starfish right in there, which I love the starfish on the beach in late summer. And we had a mother who came in, and she had visited us once before and bought a Jizo and told us a very sad story of her son, young son who drowned. And then she saw this one, just loved it, and she said, okay, I have to get it for him. To me, we get a lot of stories in there of people who come in with loss and grief. It's difficult to listen and sit and just... It's a hard thing, as you know, to hear the grief of another person, especially for the loss of a child. I started making more Jizo now with dogs and cats, the loss of dogs and cats. A friend who lost his dog, so I made one for him, and that one has been very popular. So, because for us, many of our animals are like our children. They're very clear companions for our lives. So the Jizo changes in time. In the old, if you look at those, we call it medieval period, which doesn't fit when you talk about Japanese history. But the Jizo can be very straight, stiff, maybe not so soft. I try to pick some of the softer imagery, a little bit more hard. You see a little bit of softness coming out with the face here, if you can see that a little more... feminine. If you've ever been to Byodo-in, which is in Uji, which is south of Kyoto, it's one of my favorite places, these carvings of these bodhisattvas on the clouds. It's a beautiful, beautiful temple to go to that they've restored. But again, in Japan, back in the old times, you lost children all the time. And so the Jizo became a huge cult following. And very important to people who, and then again later, who wanted children, wanted protection of their children. For a child to live to the age of one, in pre-modern times, was lucky in most cases. For a woman to survive childbirth was, was very fortunate. And so there was constantly, the Jizo became so popular in times of trouble. Now, when you look at what happens later to the Jizo image, this is one of the things I love, is how the Jizo image changes over time. And I blame Hello Kitty, because Hello Kitty has to be blamed for this, what they call the kawaii culture, cuteness culture. That the Jizo becomes cute. He gets a bigger head, which is more like a baby. It kind of looks like a little baby, old man babies is what they look like to me. They're happy. They're not so stern anymore. This is a very popular one in Kyoto that a lot of people take photographs of. The one on the far left of the two, we stayed at a temple in Japan, and I saw this one out there. I thought it was great. Whenever you see the two together, it's called a Dosojin Jizo. They protect travelers on the road. And in Japan, in this period called the Edo period, a lot of people moved around, pilgrimages everywhere, walking mainly, because they couldn't afford a horse or anything else. And so those, you find usually two Jizo everywhere. It's really rare to see three Jizo together. But if you're walking in the streets, if some of you have been to Japan, if you're just walking down the street and the neighborhood has put up usually three Jizo to protect the children who play in the street. That's how my town was filled with these things. So I'm going through this a little quickly because there's a lot to talk about with it, and I want to get to some questions. If you're interested in any reading, the six Jizos and the straw hats, this is a famous story of a couple who didn't have enough food, but they always took care of the Jizo statues. They would go and clean them off and pick up anything else around it, take care of, change their bibs. They had no money. They're on the brink of starvation. And the story was they just took care of them. And they finally found somebody leaving food on their doorstep. And it's like, okay, this is strange. And and one time it snowed, and they went outside and followed the footsteps back, and it went to all these Jizo statues. So became famous with that. That again, it was he can come to life and help other people, even if they don't ask for it. And that's something to me. That was a great story because that happened to be in Japan when I was living there. I lived 2 hours away from my wife, and so everybody thought, oh, this poor guy's bachelor, he doesn't know how to cook, which I got to college as a cook. But anyway, the Japanese are so giving. Everybody just kept leaving food on my doorstep all the time. And I finally found out it was the group of old men in the village who were farmers. I was soaking in a tub with them in the hot furo. And then they finally, I said, I have to leave. I mean, I'm leaving next week. And they're like, no, you can't leave. And they all start laughing. They start saying, we've been bringing you potatoes. Oh, you guys! So there's funny stories I have with that one. The middle book, The Face of Jizo, is really, really good. It's very academic. You should... My guess is, since everybody in here has some background with Buddhism, it'd be easier to get through. But otherwise, it's a pretty difficult book. You need a little bit of background within religious studies as well. The one on the right is probably, is I think, a really good one. It's the one I have right here. John Chosen Bays is the abbot down at Great Vow Monastery in the north of Oregon, and they have a Jizo garden. So if you're interested, and it's a monastery, and you can go to the Jizo garden, go online and check. They do have ceremonies there. They also have, I think, in August, a bone festival that they'll be having there as well. But she has a book that is really interesting because she was a pediatric nurse, and she used to take care of or a social worker, and so she dealt with children from abuse, and I think that's how she came to find the Jizo. And so she has a very interesting story. So she's really is the book I would recommend, and she has a lot of things on here on the practice of Buddhism and bodhisattvas and different things. That's a highly recommended book. So I think with time, I try to zip through, but please give me any questions that you have or comments or things that you've noticed. I always like to hear if you've, in your travels, or if you've come across anything similar. Yeah, please share.
Are most of the Jizos in the gardens, are they mostly clay, fired clay, or are they wood? Are they different materials?
If they're wood, they're probably inside the temple in Japan.
But the ones in the gardens are clay?
Today, they're more mainly concrete.
Concrete.
Japanese love concrete.
Oh, yeah. Which accounts a lot for the rounded figures. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're casted in that way. The old ones you find a lot of when they were carved from granite, mm-hmm. Which would take a long time doing that. I tried that. It's like, no. I think I'd end up with such messed up hands. I don't know how these carvers spent their lives as stonemasons carving, getting the intricate details. So concrete's faster, you know, for a lot of these things. The wood ones, there's still quite a few that are intact in the temples.
But they're inside.
Inside,
yeah.
To protect
them.
We have the same climate, very similar climate to Japan in some cases. Yeah.
So in Japan, sometimes you see Jizo with water around him, and the idea is of washing Jizo?
I haven't seen that done as a practice. Usually the beginning, you mean when you enter the temple for rinsing?
No.
Have you seen someone?
They'll have maybe three or four Jizos, and there'll be a little trough, and there'll be a scoop.
Oh, have you seen people do that?
Yeah.
I have never seen that, though.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's a new thing to me. I wonder if
our children loved it. Being able to play with water, wash the statue.
I wonder what that symbol, I wonder if that's from the Mizuko, the children, but maybe not. That's interesting.
Of course, the Buddha gets that treatment.
Yeah.
You know.
That's right, baby Buddha.
Yeah, baby Buddha.
So, we always, when my kids were old enough to explain, we would say, well, you know, you're purifying Jizo, but you're also purifying your own heart by washing Jizo.
And it's
let's just pour some water.
It's interesting, because it's an act of compassion to do that to another person, take care of them. Yeah, the next time I'm trying to go to Japan in April, so we can travel, study, look at art, and really look intently at things. Every time I went there before, I had students.
Right.
And I was locked into making sure that they were with us.
Can you say something about the staff? I've heard a couple of different stories about that.
The Shakubo. Again, it has the six rings. And I don't know much about the meaning of why he carries the staff. Because you don't see that too much in other imagery. You find a lot of pilgrims carrying a staff as well, in some cases. Some actually have that symbolized.
I was told that the reason for the staff is that you don't want to accidentally kill some animal that you're... You know, and so the rings are to make a sound.
Because it does jingle. It does jingle when you hit the rings.
Yeah, so to clear away, I heard that one. And then I also heard that it's to pry open the gate of hell. That's a good one, right? Yeah. Two very different uses.
Yeah, and then the staff that we see, you know, with typical people, you know, people carrying a staff as a farm instrument for put seeds in, you know, with a hole, or herding animals, or different things. And you know, for the Okinawans and Chinese, it becomes a weapon later. And a lot of the monks would carry this and become very adept in, you know, fending off bandits and helping other people using a staff. So it's got an interesting tradition.
Yeah.
But I hadn't heard some of those things.
So one of the most touching things is to go to a temple and see sometimes really 1,000 Jizos, and some of them are holding little pinwheels, and often there'll be a little cup with a toothbrush in front of them. Yeah. And this is, I was told, for a child who died. I thought, God, the infant mortality rate in Japan must be astronomical. But what I was told was that, in fact, for a long time, maybe it's still true, the most popular form of birth control in Japan is abortion. And so women who have had an abortion will go and buy a Jizo and make an offering to the Jizo.
Yeah, the stigma, there's not a stigma attached to abortion there. It's just a form of... just like stillbirth, the same thing. So you find that, the Jizo can adapt to those different things. We've come across the ones that I like a lot are for travelers, but for mothers as well. I've found that is a fascinating one, that the Jizo is for the protection of women within childbirth, which means that, you know, many of the husbands will go and make many prayers at that same time. And sometimes the temples vary in what you'll find with the Jizo. They might be prominent or they might be in a corner. It kind of depends. You have to look. And it's not only to one sect. You find this across every single sect in Buddhism in Japan. They've all taken on the Jizo.
This kind of reminds me of in Burma, they have gnats, which are spirits. And even though Myanmar, Burma is very much a Buddhist country, the spirits are in the village and they build little huts for the spirits and have fruit for them and flowers and so forth. And it's very much a part of their culture. And so and they have for different things, just as the Jizo is too. So it reminds me of...
There's an interesting crossover within Myanmar and some Southeast Asia. It's how Confucian culture, which is devoted to ancestor worship, and Chinese popular culture made its way, because Chinese have been great immigrants to these regions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, every religion has some focus on death and some or the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about, there isn't the, as we know, there isn't the worship of the Jizo. Many Westerners who first made their way to Asia, like, who are they? Is this their god?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, yeah, it's a god, but not as the Westerners thought. The Jizo, the Buddha. Even if you look at Chinese popular religion, all the gods, lots of them, they were all once human. They just did something great in their lifetime that they got elevated to that status. And so it's interesting that there's this, even what you're saying with Myanmar, is that there's this interesting mix of what are the gods and what peoples that we are really all one and the same. There is nothing that's above us that's omnipotent.
Mm-hmm.
It's that it is simply one thing,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a dichotomy of two, like in the Western mind,
mm-hmm.
of heaven and God. And that's one thing I really liked about Asian religion. There really isn't this sense of an omnipotent single being that created all things. There's just simply is, the ancestors. And the ancestors are everything. Yeah, anything else? I think, Carol, you're going to Japan?
Yes, in the fall. I need to have you to dinner.
it's one of our favorite topics. Yeah, what to look for there. It's such a fun place to travel to. Well, good. Well, thank you for inviting me.
Thanks so much. Yeah, thanks for coming, Alex. This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.